Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. All the polls tell us that Ohioans this time want to embrace casino-style gambling in Ohio. Issue 3 on the November ballot would pave the way for 4 casinos to be built in 4 Ohio cities. Ohio House Assistant Minority Leader Lou Blessing opposes Issue 3. He's on the phone today to tell us why. Thanks for being with us, Representative Blessing.
My pleasure.
Also with us in the studio is Bob Tenenbaum. He is speaking for the Ohio Jobs and Growth Committee, which is backing Issue 3. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you, Ann, and thanks for having us on today.
My pleasure. Representative Blessing, let's start with you. You usually support gambling issues in Ohio. Why not this time?
Well, this one was drafted so narrowly as to just benefit 4 individuals. In other words, the casinos that are going to be built, these licenses aren't going to be bid out to anyone. They're going to be given to the people that own 4 specific parcels of property. That bothers me. I think there's a problem with the tax rate at 33%, but my major concern is the tax issue. When you read this, there's a way for these casinos to wager with cash. In other words, if they had a poker game used all cash, they could avoid all the taxes.
Those are the 3 main. What exactly, can you be very specific about the cash wager issue and where it is in the language that you see this opportunity?
Sure. When you look at the definition of gross casino revenue, and I'll read this word for word.
Okay.
Gross casino revenue means total amount of money exchanged for the purchase of chips, tokens, tickets, etc. In other words, if nothing's exchanged, there's no taxable event. So if a person walks into a casino with cash and gambles with cash, that's not a taxable event. Now, that definition, it looks to me like, was taken almost word for word from West Virginia. But what West Virginia did is banned cash wagering. There's nothing in this proposal that bans cash wagering.
Wouldn't this eventually, though, if the issue is passed, if the voters approve it, wouldn't it go to rules, and couldn't those sort of things be clarified at the legislative?
No.
Okay.
No, because casino gaming, when you look at that definition, it says casino gaming means any type of slot machine or table game wagering using money. So using cash means casino gaming. And then it says casino gaming shall be authorized at the 4 casino facilities. Shall be authorized means just that. Cash wagering shall be authorized, and the General Assembly cannot prohibit cash wagering, nor can any agency of the state. The fact that the General Assembly and state agencies can't trump the Constitution is so well settled as not to be debatable.
Bob, what do you say to that?
Well, I'm glad this came up first because I think it's time to put it to rest. First of all, cash gaming is not something that casinos do, and I know that Representative Blessing went to Indiana and he saw somebody putting cash into a slot machine. That cash was exchanged for an electronic credit, and the backup for that is the fact that Indiana actually prohibits cash gaming. So seeing a dollar go into a slot machine does not mean you're participating in cash gaming. Second of all, and I've never heard him say this before, I don't know where Representative Blessing is coming up with the notion that the legislature or the Casino Control Commission or both couldn't double up on the reassurance of that and pass a ban on cash gaming, which is what other states have done. And we not only would not object to that, we'd support it. So I think this is an issue that's out there. It's being put out there by the organization that Representative Blessing is a state co-chair of, TruthPack, which is actually funded by a West Virginia gaming company that owns a casino that gets 70% of its revenue and 70% of its customers from Ohio, and it's pretty obvious why they don't want casinos in Ohio.
Okay. What about the tax rate? In many states, it's 50%. This proposal puts it at 33%. Representative Blessing, what's your criticism there?
No, it's too low. The obvious criticism. I believe Maryland passed one that was in the 60s. I just think 33% is too low to do this at. There's usually 2 different rates. Slot machines, you could have a higher rate than table games. They're more profitable. And there's there's no differentiation in the rates.
Bob,
let's talk about those rates for a minute, because again, this is another issue that I think ought to be put to bed. If issue 3 passes, Ohio will have, among states that have full casinos, the fourth highest tax rate in the nation.
What are the other ones?
The ones that are higher?
Yeah.
I don't know off the top of my head, although that information is available from the American Gaming Association. TruthPAC keeps using Pennsylvania as the example. Well, Pennsylvania doesn't have casinos. It only has racetrack slot machines. The two states that border Ohio that have full casinos are Indiana and Michigan. Indiana's tax rate ranges from 15 to 40%. It averages about 37%. Michigan's tax rate is 19%. And Pennsylvania, which is the state that the opposition keeps referring to, is now considering table games, and they have a bunch of proposals before their legislature, and the highest tax rate in any of those proposals for full casinos is 21%. So we're not talking about a low tax rate. I wouldn't even say we're talking about an average tax rate. We're talking about a rate that's above average for states that have full casinos, which is what Ohio would have.
Representative Blessing, what about that? I mean, if it compares favorably, what's the criticism?
Well, the criticism is I don't agree with Bob. I don't think there's tax. But why would Maryland pass something in the 60s?
Maryland's tax is
Let me finish.
Maryland's tax is for racetrack slots, okay. Representative Blessing.
Okay.
Why didn't you bid this out, Bob, if we're going to ask questions?
We're gonna get to all that, but I just wanted to stick with the tax rate now. And it looks like at this rate, Ohioans are satisfied with the revenue that's projected to be generated, Representative Blessing. So why, if it compares favorably to nearby states?
Again, there's no guarantee of any revenue. What Bob mentioned before was that other states have passed bans on cash wagering. They didn't do that. They did that by statute. By putting this proposal in the Constitution, the only way you can change that with another constitutional amendment. And if Bob disagrees with that, in other words, if he thinks the General Assembly can change a constitutional provision by statute, he should say that now. But
no,
I know that's not a fact.
I know. But that obviously is not a fact. But what's really going on here is that's not necessary, because the language of the amendment does not stop the legislature or the Casino Control Commission from banning cash gaming, and the language of the amendment does not exempt any wager from the tax. And I believe this morning the Greater Cleveland Partnership, which is basically the Chamber of Commerce in Cleveland, is coming out with a study that it had commissioned that verifies that. And last week, former State Treasurer Mary Ellen Withrow said the same thing. The Ohio proposal does not exempt any wager, regardless of how it's made, from the 33% tax. And I think, with all due respect, I think the argument is silly and needs to be put to bed.
Representative Blessing, I want to be really clear. There's no way that the legislature can come behind this and make rules that would satisfy your criticism.
All right. So you know this.
Yeah, I just want to be real clear for
Bob,
the listeners.
Bob just told you that the General Assembly cannot change a constitutional provision by statute.
Right. They can't change
the statute. Here's what the constitutional provision says. Casino gaming means any type of slot machine or table gaming wagering using money. Money is cash. It then says casino gaming, which is cash wagering, shall be authorized. There's nothing we can do to change that constitutional provision.
How would you change it if you could change it?
You'd have to put another constitutional provision out there and have the voters vote on it.
But if you could have had the language that you would prefer, what would the language in the existing constitutional provision, what would it be?
Any type of gross casino proceeds, I would simply add the term cash.
Including cash.
Yeah, that's all you had to do. And the problem is, this is almost word for word from West Virginia. They put a ban in I have no idea why the proponents didn't put a ban in this one.
They put the ban in the Constitution.
No, West Virginia put theirs in by statute. But they set up their casinos by statute, not by constitutional provision, so they could do that.
So once the constitutional provision is enacted, there's no way to monkey with it at the legislative level. You can't make rules. You can't fine tune it. Nothing. It's just flat out what it is.
You can make rules that are consistent with the constitutional provision. But when you have a provision that says cash wagering shall be authorized, you can't have a rule or statute that says, oh, no.
Bob?
I don't recall here, when you read that language, I don't recall hearing the word cash.
Oh, well, let me read it to you again. Casino gaming means any type of slot machine or table game wagering using money. Now, Bob, I think Webster says money is cash. That means casino gaming is cash wagering. And then it says casino gaming shall be authorized. It's pretty clear to me.
Well, I think we could argue this from now till doomsday. The show would end and we'd still be arguing.
Thank God for Election Day.
Well, that was an appropriate response.
Okay, so what do you think if there's no way of knowing, you think, then, as long as it's the language is what it is, Representative Blessing, there's no way of knowing what lost opportunity there is for the taxpayers then, or for Ohioans.
If you take the amount that they're projecting and subtract it out, that's what they're losing. I mean, I don't know whether they're going to use cash gaming, but they certainly could under this proposal. There's no question they could.
Bob, do you know how common cash gaming is? I'm trying to figure out.
It's about as common as Indiana beating Ohio State in football. It's simply not used. It's anachronistic. Casino companies need very accurate audits for their own business reasons. Government agencies need very accurate audits in order to make sure that the gaming is being conducted properly. Other than in, I believe, maybe Nevada, nobody uses cash gaming, period.
Representative Blessing, do you know of anywhere that uses it?
Well, I don't think they use it other than Nevada. Now, that's a change from Bob's opinion before. He said no one used it. But let's say this. All those states Bob mentioned either ban cash wagering, well, flat out ban it. The question becomes, if you're not going to use it, if you used West Virginia statute, which you did, why wouldn't you put a ban in there? I mean, that would have solved the problem.
As I said,
Here's the question. If you're going to make $1 million a week, say, in a rake from a cash poker game, and you decide to use cash, you're going to do that. Because if you don't, you're going to lose $333,000 a week. The other states, as Bob said, ban cash wagering, so there's no problem. But they'll have the opportunity in this state to wager with cash. That's the problem.
We're going to have to take a short break. If you would like to join the conversation about Issue 3 on the ballot in November regarding gambling in Ohio, give us a call at 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joining me today, Ohio House Assistant Minority Leader Lou Blessing, who opposes Issue 3, and also Bob Tenenbaum. He is speaking for the Ohio Jobs and Growth Committee. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. We'll be right back.
There's inflammatory rhetoric on each end of the political spectrum. On the right, a column that predicts a remote, though growing, chance of a military coup to resolve the Obama problem. On the left, a congressman accuses Republicans of wanting people to die quickly. I'm Neil Conan, gauging the effect of the nastier discord on our political discourse. Plus, the opinion page, next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon. It starts at 2 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Currently 51 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1020. Sunshine in the forecast for today, a high of 65. Clear skies tonight and a low of 45. Sunshine Tuesday morning and then a chance of afternoon rain, maybe a pop-up thunderstorm. A high of 72 for Tuesday. Tuesday night, rain is likely and a low of 55. Partly cloudy on Wednesday and a high of 60. And now back to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about Issue 3 with a spokesman for the Ohio Jobs and Growth Committee, Bob Tenenbaum. That's the committee that supports and put Issue 3 on the ballot in the first place. And also State Representative Lou Blessing, who opposes the issue. He is on the phone with us. Bob, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Ann.
And Lou, thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you, Ann.
Let's take a call right now from Sue. She's got a question about the process. Sue, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to ask a couple of things. First, why this is being done through the state constitution.
Okay, that's one question. Let's find out, Bob. Why is it on the state constitution?
Well, Representative Blessing, being an attorney, can tell me if I'm wrong on this, but it's certainly my understanding, and I think it's been everybody's understanding, that because of the way the Constitution is written in terms of gaming, you must have a constitutional amendment to allow any expansion of gambling in Ohio. I don't know that there's a great deal of argument about that. And it also answers the question that Representative Blessing raised about why is it that this particular amendment identifies four specific parcels of land and basically only the owners of that land can apply for a casino license. And the reason is somebody has to put this on the ballot. If the voters are going to have a chance to vote for it, that's a very, very expensive process. And we acknowledge that in order to get anybody at all who's willing to spend that kind of money to put an amendment on the ballot, they need to be guaranteed that they're going to be involved in the casinos if and when the issue passes.
That they have a vested interest.
Yes.
How much money does it cost to put something on the ballot these days?
Because of the number of signatures that are needed, which is above 400,000, which means you really have to collect about 750,000 signatures, the last several amendments that have been put on the ballot by initiative petition have cost about $4 to $4.5 million just to get them on the ballot.
Now, I heard there were some folks going through my neighborhood door to door talking about Issue 3, people backing it. Is that necessarily your organization or could that be someone else?
No, that probably is our organization.
Okay. And how much do you spend doing that sort of thing to get out the vote, I guess?
It's a lot of money. We haven't given out a number for what the total budget for the campaign is, and we have to report on October 21st, I think it is, everything we've spent up to that point, and we will.
Sue, you had another question. I'm going to let you do it because you stopped when I asked you to.
Well, it's partly answered. It
okay.
had to do with who exactly is benefiting, who in those four cities. Is it one casino corporation or, you know, who's going to get
the licenses? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Bob can tell us that.
Very simple answer. There are two organizations that are sponsoring this issue. One of them is Penn National Gaming, a very successful regional gaming company. They operate in I'm not even sure how many states. And actually has been the only casino company in the nation. It is publicly owned. That's been profitable over the last year or year and a half. And the second organization is called Rock Ventures. It's the development arm of the organization of Dan Gilbert. Dan Gilbert is the founder and chairman of Quicken Loans, the largest online mortgage company in the world, and the majority owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
We have an email from Angela. She says, asks whether Indiana, Pennsylvania, and Michigan have seen any significant tax revenue for allowing more gambling in their states. Bob?
I think the answer is clearly yes. Pennsylvania's is used. Everybody uses this tax revenue differently. Pennsylvania uses it to provide property tax rollbacks for residents. Indiana and Michigan, I believe, both put theirs into the general fund. I don't have the numbers in front of me, although it's easy enough to find by going to the Gaming Commission websites of those states. But the revenue that's produced is substantial, and the revenue that we estimate – the tax revenue that we estimate will be produced by Issue 3 is $651 million a year. And the vast majority of that is going to go to the 88 counties, the eight largest cities, and every school district in the state.
Representative Blessing, one of your criticisms was the narrowness of the licensing opportunity. Can you tell us why that bothers you? And is it about these just having these four casinos in just the four cities?
No, it's not just in the four cities. It's the fact that there's four specific parcels. In other words, the owners of those parcels, who are the people that are pushing this, those things should be let out to bid. And I'll guarantee you, you'll get more than $50 million if you do that. You don't need to put that in any specific parcel. You just say they're in those four counties. Let the county commissioners or city council determine where they're going to be and let it out for bid to maximize the revenue. I do want to correct an answer that Bob gave. Why they put it in the Constitution, the General Assembly could put casinos wherever they wanted by statute. The only thing the Constitution prohibits is lotteries. We could change the gambling laws at any time to put table games wherever we want. So that's not quite accurate.
Not being a lawyer, I won't attempt to argue with that. But the reality is the legislature has never done it, period.
Oh, I would agree with that. I would certainly agree with that. And I would agree with Bob that I doubt that they would do it. But I think the reason they put it in the Constitution this way and so tightly drafted this way is there's nothing we can do about this.
Well,
I've had that discussion with people, and I think the number of people who actually think the legislature could create casino gaming by statute is a very small number of people. And they're all lawyers.
Well, they're all wrong, Bob. I can guarantee you that. The only thing the Constitution bans is lotteries. If you can go through the Constitution, tell me where it bans other things than that, let me know.
Well, I think the Supreme Court's going to help us decide that because of the slots proposal.
If you'd like to join this conversation, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don, you're on the air. What do you want?
Okay, am I on?
You're on.
Okay, I'm sorry. This is from Mr. Tenenbaum. I'm a minority business person, and you're in major cities. What is Penn National's minority inclusion in the construction and the operation of casinos been? Because I've been to these casinos, and I see a lot of minority people participating as customers, and I'm looking at, you know, if you're going to spend $300 million in Columbus and another $300 million-plus in Toledo, what kind of minority business provisions are you making?
Okay, thank you, Don.
I don't work for Penn National, and I'm not as familiar as I could be with the details of their record in terms of minority participation, but Penn has generally a very good reputation for including local and minority businesses in all of their projects and in their hiring practices, and I think that's been backed up by various national African American business organizations that have over the years given Penn actually some awards for their minority participation. I think I'm going to take the opportunity to spin off into something that we haven't discussed, and that is the job creation piece of Issue 3. We have a University of Cincinnati College of Business study that estimates that 34,000 jobs will be created by the passage of Issue 3. 19,000 of those would be construction jobs, which we keep hearing criticism of because they're temporary, but I think anybody in the construction business will tell you that all construction jobs are temporary. When the building's finished, the jobs are finished. But there are an awful lot of construction workers in this state who would very much like a job right now. And 15,000 jobs will be permanent jobs once the casinos open.
One thing, Bob, as far as the job right now phrase goes, is there's nothing in the ballot issue that tells us when the casinos might actually be built. Is there?
No, there's nothing in the amendment, but both parties have indicated that they will break ground immediately upon receiving licenses, which probably would be in the middle of next year, 2010. The casinos would then be finished in 2012. We're using 2013 as the actual first full year of operation. but it's likely all four of them would be open in 2012.
Would they start – are they talking about digging in all at once?
Yes. They're talking about putting shovels in the ground literally the day after they receive licenses from the state.
Another issue – shouldn't the cost of the license reflect where the business will operate?
You mean more in one city than in another city?
Yes.
I don't think necessarily. And the license cost has also been an issue that's been raised by the opposition. And I'm going to use Pennsylvania again as an example. The legislation currently under consideration that would allow table gaming, which Pennsylvania does not allow at the moment, calls for a license fee of about $10 million, which is about a fifth of what we're talking about in Ohio.
Representative Blessing, those two issues, jobs. Do you have any response to the promises of jobs?
Well, you know, if they build them. And again, you know, the proponents are promising not to use cash wagering. Now they're promising to build these things. You know, this is built on promises. If they wanted to do that, they should have said these will be built by such and such a date. So I don't know that there's going to be any jobs at all. If they build them, certainly there'll be construction jobs. But when those go away, you'll have those casino jobs.
I think most people realize that nobody's going to spend millions of dollars to get this thing onto the ballot and more millions of dollars to run a campaign to get it passed so that they can then not build a casino. It simply defies any logic at all.
I'll give you some logic. Penn National just spent $38 million to defeat the issue last year. They just spent, I can't imagine how much money, on their new Hollywood casino, 20 minutes from downtown Cincinnati.
$350 million.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And to keep those dollars at their casino, it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't build anything in Cincinnati.
That's an enormously cynical view, and I think you'd have a hard time convincing the mayor of Cincinnati, the county commissioners, and the Cincinnati Chamber of Commerce, all of which have endorsed the issue after meeting with the proposed developers.
So why didn't you put it in the proposal?
Because
the
there's
timeline.
We get this argument both ways. Why are you mucking up the Constitution with this? And then why doesn't the constitutional amendment have more in it? It's like we can't win. If we have a constitutional amendment, it's mucking around with the Constitution. But now the same people who make that argument then say, well, you ought to have this and this and this and this and this in the constitutional amendment. It just isn't logical.
Representative Blessing, what about the issue of the fixed license fees? Do you have any criticism of that?
Obviously, they should be let out for bid. Let's see how much we can get for a license.
You think we could get more than 50?
I don't think anyone disputes that if we put these up for bid, we'd get more than $50 million. No question. Probably seven or eight times that, easily.
Well,
how are we to know? You're talking about adding a table game license to an already existing casino in Pennsylvania. That's not going to cut it.
What? I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you're referring to.
Well, Bob mentioned, you know, it's $10 million to add table games. You know, 80% of the revenue is probably from slots in a casino. I mean, and it's already existing. The gambling's already been done. All the operations are already in place. That's not a big deal. To put a new casino in a state with no casinos is a big deal.
I'm going to take a quick call. John, you're on the air. You talk about more money leaving the state if Ohio is not a destination for gaming.
That's correct. I've read a business model, a successful business model put together by the Wharton School of Business, suggests that any gambling business that wants to be successful has to rely on money coming from outside the area in order for the business to be sustainable. So this issue is being sold to us as keeping Ohio dollars in Ohio. But beyond that, beyond keeping our own gamblers in the borders, we have to attract people from outside of the state to make these businesses successful. And, you know, we're also told in these ads that how all the surrounding states already have casinos. So in the end, the pie gets a little thinner, I think, for the whole region. So If Penn National already has interest in all these other places, I would suggest that perhaps there is no guarantee that some of these places might be built. Why would they do that if they need to attract people, you know, regionally? And so the net result would be, if these casinos would be built, unless the ownership groups are all Ohio, then the net result would be that money would be leaving Ohio.
In other words, you think it's worth it for them to invest tens of millions of dollars in a ballot issue that would make them essentially in control of the future of gaming in Ohio?
Precisely.
Okay.
That's just one piece of it.
Okay, John.
Well, the whole thing is bad.
That's the piece you get. Thanks for waiting today. I appreciate your call. What about that? I mean, that this, it could be an investment to not do anything.
Well,
it wouldn't be the first time someone's invested in something to control it in order to not do anything with it.
It just defies logic, and let me explain why. And it's using the same out-of-state dollar numbers that you're talking about. The estimate that we have from an organization called the Innovation Group, which is one of the leading international gaming and hospitality consulting companies in the world, is that approximately $1.4 billion is leaving Ohio every year as Ohioans go to other states, primarily to our border states, to gamble. Now, we don't claim that we can bring all of that money back to Ohio, but the estimate is that we can bring about $1 billion back into Ohio. And it's not just the $1 billion which creates the jobs in other states. It's the tax revenue that goes with it. There was a great quote in a story in the Columbus Dispatch this morning where they sent a reporter to the Hollywood Casino that's owned by Penn National outside of Cincinnati in Indiana. And somebody said they were tired of having to drive across the state line and pay tax money to Indiana. So the market in Ohio is so big that that when you put casinos in Ohio, rather than having to scramble for customers, what you're really doing is stripping customers away from casinos in the bordering states.
We got to take a short break right now, but that just begs that up, you know. Brings up the other issue of why would you be taking customers away from the operations in the bordering states? And I want to get to that, but we have to take a break right now. I just didn't want to forget that. If you would like to join the conversation about issue 3, give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. We'll be right back.
I listen to WOSU because it's one stop for international and local news. The news about where my friends live, where I live, and what's going on around me. It's a place to find that information in an intelligent manner, not have to worry about commercial bias. My name is Jeff Johnson, and WOSU is my source for news and information as it relates to my friends and family around the world, as well as here in Columbus, Ohio.
And good morning from WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurovich, 52 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1040. In just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Sides with Ann Fisher will be here. In light of the recent failed execution of Ohio inmate Romel Broom, a discussion of the issues raised by the death penalty and lethal injection in Ohio with Associated Press reporter Andrew Welsh Huggins. That discussion begins at 11 o'clock, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from Integrate, helping to improve business performance through brand design and marketing communications for more than 20 years. On the web at integrateinc.com or at 614-421-0004.
In the weather forecast for today, sunshine and a high of 65, clear skies tonight and a low of 45, sunshine for Tuesday morning, and then afternoon rain showers are possible Tuesday afternoon, a high of 72. For Tuesday night, rain is likely and a low of 55. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about Issue 3 with a spokesman for the Ohio Jobs and Growth Committee, Bob Tenenbaum. Thanks for being here, Bob.
Thank you, Ann.
And also State Representative Lou Blessing, who opposes Issue 3. He is on the phone. Thanks for being with us, Representative Blessing.
Thank you, Ann.
Bob, you know, I have a whole bunch of questions that I'm never going to have time for. But I do want to get back to that issue. You just described a scenario to me that suggests you're sucking, you know, a billion away from the bordering states that are enjoying Ohio gamblers wagering right now. A lot of it would be coming from operations that are owned by the companies you're working for.
Well, actually, the only operation that fits that description is Penn National's casino outside of Cincinnati mm-hmm. in the state of Indiana. And Penn National would not be developing the casino in Cincinnati. Dan Gilbert's organization would.
So they wouldn't be competing
with
themselves.
So Penn would not be competing with itself in the Cincinnati market. But, and the belief is, and I think if you look at the numbers that the Hollywood Casino in Indiana report, the market is enormous. In Southwest Ohio, you're drawing not only from Cincinnati, but you're drawing from Dayton and Columbus. I mean, you can drive around downtown Columbus and see advertising for casinos in West Virginia, casinos in Pennsylvania, and casinos in Indiana. And that's in Columbus, which is in the middle of the state, and it's a pretty good drive to any of these casinos from here. Ohio's an enormous market, and we're talking about putting casinos that are going to cost a minimum, because it's required, of $250 million, and actually going to cost considerably more, in the downtown area of the four largest cities of this state, all of which clearly need help in downtown development. This is going to create an atmosphere that's going to bring people into Ohio. It's going to bring people into the downtown areas of these cities. It's going to create jobs, and it's going to produce $651 million a year in tax revenue. And
okay.
I think that's why the polls are showing something different this year than we've seen in the past.
I wanted to move on to a couple other issues. I have been to a casino before, and I do remember that one of my biggest impressions the first time I was in one in Las Vegas was how it's all inclusive. You walk in, you can go to the lunch counter for lunch. There's a breakfast place. There's the buffet. You don't need to leave to get drinks. There's entertainment. You can sleep there. You can stay up all night
if you want. The sleeping won't be the case. Yeah.
But what about the impact on other businesses? In a way, you think bringing Huntington Park to the Arena District is a good thing. It brought more people downtown, and it kind of made a 365-day-a-year operation down in the Arena District when you add it to the Blue Jackets and Nationwide. But this would not necessarily be the same scenario. And so when you talk about building up other businesses downtown, how does that work?
Well, it's a very valid question, and let me use Columbus as the example because that's where your listeners are for the most part. The Columbus Casino would be located at the west end of Nationwide Boulevard. It's about two blocks from where Huntington Park now sits. Penn National has stated publicly, A, it will not build a hotel, and there will not be a hotel at any of these four casinos. That's done quite intentionally because the idea is not to take away business from existing hotels, but rather to provide new business for existing hotels. And Penn National has a system where it actually books hotel rooms in other people's hotels off its website. Penn has also said that it will not do what many people have feared, and that is have free or discounted food in their casino. They have pledged to the Columbus Convention and Visitors Bureau that they will sell food at or slightly above prevailing prices in the Arena District. Now, we've heard a lot from the developers of the Arena District that they're opposed to this because it doesn't fit their vision. And yet, after the first year of Huntington Park, and I might point out that Huntington Park has plenty of places to eat and drink also, and their idea is to get you in there and you do your eating and your drinking and your baseball watching. But after that first year was completed, there was a major story in the Dispatch about the impact of the ballpark. And one of the things that was said by a representative of the Arena District developer was they're trying to turn it into a 24/7, 365 entertainment district. Well, the Blue Jackets only play 40 games at home, and the Clippers only play, I believe it's 70 games at home. That's basically 110 days. We're talking about a casino that's going to be open, could be open if they choose, 24 hours a day, every day of the week, all year. If you want to create a 24/7, 365 entertainment district. What better way to do it?
Representative Blessing, you've always supported gambling in the past. You're not intrinsically opposed to gambling. Do you disagree with that?
Well,
that estimation.
Well, it's promises, promises. We won't do this. We won't do that. We will do this. They chose not to go through the General Assembly. They chose to draft a constitutional amendment that's tightly written. You know, if you believe all their promises, you know, what can I tell you? Vote for it. But, you know,
I would point out that Representative Blessing just said they chose not to go through the General Assembly. And about 15 minutes ago, he said the chances of the General Assembly ever doing this are nil.
It's true. You did say that, Representative Blessing.
I did, legislatively, but that's not true with the constitutional amendment. As a matter of fact, Penn National originally started this process with going through the General Assembly with a constitutional amendment and then changed their mind.
Well, I think they changed their mind because the message they got from the General Assembly is the one you gave. This is never going to happen.
No, not statutorily, but well, Bob, I passed a constitutional amendment in 2003 with 60% in the Senate, over 60%. It failed in the House by 2 votes. I mean, now we've got a better economic situation to pass this, as you well know and as you just pointed out. It should have gone through the General Assembly as a constitutional amendment. And in this economic environment, I think it would have happened.
We have a few more minutes left. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. One question that has not been raised much at all compared to years prior, in my opinion, is the issue of the social impact of casinos, the crime that comes with casinos, what happens with gambling addictions and how are we handling those. And Henry's on the line right now. You wanted to ask about that.
Henry. Yes, I am going to vote against casinos because I consider it legalized larceny.
Okay, well, how? I mean,
I feel you can't stop people from gambling. I realize that. But I feel that it takes money out of the pockets of more poor people and more rich people. I think we are going to need something like Gamblers Anonymous take care of all the people who will go down to casinos. I've been in casinos. I know what they are. And so it's nothing new for me. I can resist them. I can walk through without any problem.
But not everybody can, you're saying.
That's right.
Okay, well, thanks for your call, Henry. Bob, what about that? What sort of money is being set aside for to deal with the social ills?
Well, first of all, I want to say I think Henry's question is a great question, and I absolutely respect his view. And if he's voting no, he's voting no for a reason that, while I don't agree with it, I certainly respect it. The constitutional amendment that would create the casinos designates 2% of all of the tax revenue, which is about $13 million a year, for the treatment of problem gaming and other addictions, which are programs that, as everybody who follows the state budget knows, have been cut severely. This is additional money. So we recognize that there are some people who are susceptible to gambling addiction. The $13 million a year that's provided in this amendment is one of the highest totals in the nation among all states that have gambling to help people who do become addicted to gambling.
You know, it's kind of interesting when you talk about the statistics in Ohio and how many people are out there gambling. You're saying it's a huge market in Ohio, and yet Ohioans have repeatedly voted down other issues. And this one, is it that we're just so desperate now? We need the money so badly that we're willing to overlook all of our other oppositions or other criticisms of this now?
I think that's part of it. I think clearly the economy is terribly stagnant and in a bad way, and the jobs and the tax revenue that would be created would be very helpful. I think it's also the fact that people are now looking around and realizing that, with the exception of Kentucky, which is also considering it, every state surrounding us has gambling. We are now an island in the middle of all these gambling states, and people, I believe, are starting to recognize that there are economic benefits to the state by having gambling in the state of Ohio, and that's why I think we're going to see a different outcome this year.
We have an email from Stephen. Are there any studies that show the impact of readily available gambling on those who are already below the poverty line? So, Representative Blessing, do you know what the impact is, relatively speaking, on poor people?
I would guess it's the same as on rich people. But generally, I think I recall some studies, and this is from recollection, that it's probably more effective of those in the lower income brackets.
It affects more people.
Yes.
Because they have a lot less to lose.
They're more likely to gamble, frankly.
Okay. Bob, what do you think about that?
I mean,
they're not necessarily the people that can drive to West Virginia to gamble.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen studies that indicate that there is some effect like that. Frankly, I'm not an expert on the subject. But my guess is if you look at who plays the lottery, for instance, you probably find the same thing.
You know, another big change is the support by law enforcement on this one. Tell us about how much money will be going to law enforcement once the casinos are up and running.
Well, from the state level, there's another 2%, which is $13 million a year, that's going to go to the state. And I want to make that clear because there have been some outrageous attacks on the Fraternal Order of Police by, amazingly enough, church groups, which have accused the FOP of being bought off. The FOP doesn't get a nickel out of this. The money goes for law enforcement training all over the state, and the beneficiaries of that, quite obviously, the people of Ohio get better law enforcement. We don't know the exact amount that the counties and the cities will take their tax revenue and use for public safety, but obviously public safety is a major piece of any county and city budget. So I think the FOP also believes that that law enforcement agencies, police departments, sheriff's departments are going to benefit from the tax revenue that's coming in. And we're seeing a situation in Ohio where many communities have not only not been able to hire additional officers, but have in fact laid off law enforcement officials.
Representative Blessing, do you have any argument with that?
We have an argument with that in that the money is designated for training. It's not designated hire police officers.
Well, that's the 2% of the state money. We're talking about $651 million, most of which is going to counties and cities and schools, and the county and city money can be used any way those counties and cities want to use it. And it's pretty obvious to anybody who follows that they're going to use some of it for public safety, because that's the biggest piece of most city budgets.
Assuming that they collect that tax, that's a huge assumption. Now, if you put a casino 24/7 in the district like you're talking about in Columbus, you're talking about hiring a whole lot of people. And I'm not sure that tax revenue, when you break it down per city, is going to cover that.
Well, the FOP has talked to law enforcement officials in many other cities where there are casinos. And what they have told us is that in other cities they have learned that the problems of crime created by the presence of casino are no greater than the problems created by any large gathering of people, whether that be a Blue Jackets game or the Ohio State Fair or, in the extreme example, an Ohio State football game.
Sorry, Representative Blessing.
Go ahead.
I was going to kind of change the subject just a little bit and go back to the $13 million that would be spent. Is that on an annual basis?
That's annual.
How do you come up with that number? What's the magic about $13 million? Because gambling addiction is one of the toughest addictions to break. In fact, it's just like with any addiction. You're never free of it.
Yeah. Well,
you live with it.
I don't know that there's magic to the number. It's a percentage. It's 2% of the total tax revenue that we believe this issue will produce. And you know, you've got a pie, and you split the pie. And this pie happens to be split so that a little more than half of the money goes to the 88 counties and the 8 largest cities, and another third of it is divided among every school district in Ohio. We took what's left. And 5% of it, for instance, will fund the operations of the Casino Control Commission. Another 5% goes to the horse racing industry, which we acknowledge is in difficult straits, and it goes to the State Racing Commission to be used to promote horse racing in Ohio. But for instance, they could use it to increase purses so that the horse tracks can somewhat recover from the difficulties they've had. We've taken a pie and basically tried to divide it in a way that we think provides the most for the most people in Ohio.
Representative Blessing, how do you like how that pie's cut up?
Well, I think the pie is cut up the way it is to garner support for the proposal. I mean, if you cut everyone in, sure, you're going to have a lot of support for the proposal, but I wouldn't have done that that way. When you earmark money for specific things, that really doesn't do anything for the state budget in the sense that it's earmarked. I mean, we may need it for other purposes, and some people may need it in the cities and counties for other purposes. So, you know, I wouldn't have done that. I would have put that money in the general revenue fund,
very quickly,
assuming they collect it.
Very quickly, the money going to the cities and the counties and the schools is, in fact, designated for their general funds. They can do whatever they want with it.
It's not in the general revenue fund of the state budget, Bob.
No,
that's what I said.
It's the locals. Okay. Is there any guarantee that the casino companies wouldn't bring in experienced employees for the higher-paying jobs and leave Ohioans kind of with the crumbs? I mean, they don't have the experience. Why not bring people in from other states? There's nothing in the language that would prevent you from doing that, is there?
Well, if the higher-paying jobs, if you're talking about the four or five top executive jobs, clearly those are going to be people who are experienced in running casinos, and there isn't anybody in Ohio experienced in running a casino because we don't have casinos. The vast majority of those jobs are not what you would call high level. They're moderate income. In some cases, they're relatively low income. But they, according to the University of Cincinnati study, they perfectly suit the workforce that exists in Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, and Toledo. Nobody is going to go pay moving expenses to hire somebody who's a waitress in Las Vegas so they can have a job as a waitress in Ohio. It's just silly.
Representative Blessing, I've got about 15 seconds. I wanted to give you a chance to respond to that, though. I'm really short on time.
Promises. Okay. Again, they could have put a provision in there requiring Ohio people to be hired, and they did not.
Okay. All right. We're out of time. My thanks to State Representative Lou Blessing for being here to give us his reasons for opposing Issue 3, and also Bob Tenenbaum for the Ohio Jobs and Growth Committee, which is backing Issue 3. Thanks for being here. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.